Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I am Jason Verlinde, and for the last month, we've had string theories take over this podcast, and this, I am sad to say, is our last installment. String Theories, as you hopefully know by now, is this amazing book penned by two great guitarists and educators and friends, Ethan Sherman and Adam Levy. I got my copy at the 2023 Fretboard Summit. I found it revelatory. Lots of little life hacks and resolutions and food for thought for guitarists wanting to get a little better or maybe just get out of a rut. So with the start of the new year, I handed the keys to this podcast over to Ethan and Adam with very little instruction, and they have taken the ball and run with it. They've been sharing insights. They've been sharing New Year's resolutions as well as those of their friends and peers. It's been an absolute joy for me. I've loved getting to know both Adam and Ethan better through this podcast. I hope you have as well. And today, they are going out with a bang. This is the most all-star lineup of call-in guests ever. I hope you like it. If you do, please go buy their book, stringtheoriesbook.com, and please share these podcasts with your friends if you've enjoyed them. And if you like a guitar podcast that takes chances once in a while and shares fun perspectives like we have been, be like Adam, be like Ethan, subscribe to the Fretboard Journal magazine. I would truly appreciate it. It is a journal. It's a quarterly of unique and eclectic guitar stories from musicians by musicians, and it's a community. And this podcast is one huge aspect of it. I've got a whole bunch of interviews lined up and teed up for next week and beyond on this podcast. The podcast is not going anywhere. Matt the Electrician, you are on deck. You are my next guest. But I do want to add that I wanted to be a part of the fun of the String Theories takeover. So if you stick around to the very end of this episode, I'm going to share a couple of my New Year's resolutions for 2024. Adam and Ethan didn't even know I was doing this, but it's my podcast, so I can do what I want. Before we get to their podcast, we have a couple of sponsors I want to shout out. Mike and Mike's Guitar Bar, the incredible vintage instrument store and guitar repair center right here in Seattle, Washington. Follow them on Instagram or Reverb, see what the fuss is about, and then come visit them if you are ever in the Pacific Northwest. Peghead Nation, an invaluable guitar, mandolin, and banjo instruction portal with some of our favorite instructors around, including many Fretboard Journal former subjects, is giving you all your first month free or $20 off of any annual subscription. Just use the discount code FRETBOARD when you check out. Isotope, the masterminds behind the amazing software RX10 and a whole bunch of other stuff, are giving you 10% off your order with the discount FRET10. If you have not played with their audio repair or mastering software yet, give it a try. You'll be floored at all it can do. And Stringjoy Strings, a cult favorite out of Nashville that have quickly become one of the fastest growing string companies around, for both guitar and mandolin strings now, are offering you 10% off your first order with the discount code FRETBOARD. Again, this is the fourth installment of the String Theories Takeover. If you haven't checked out the first three installments, you should. And with that, I am handing the podcast over one last time to Adam and Ethan.
Hi, everybody. I'm Adam.
I'm Ethan.
And this is the fourth and final episode of the String Theories Takeover of the Fretboard Journal podcast. Thanks to Jason Verlinde for inviting us to do this. Before we started recording, I was asking Ethan how it's going because he's the one doing all the editing of our episodes. And he was telling me about his process in Logic. And then I remembered that your New Year's resolution was opening Logic every day. So I just wanted to segue into that because now we're into the year. Like it's no longer, you know, like, what do they say? The dew is off the rose, or I don't know what they say.
It's not the new year anymore. It's just the year.
It's just the year. So I wonder like how it's going with your Logic resolution.
It's going. Having this project to open the thing up, it's definitely increased the days I would have opened it up. Of course, the background incentive of that resolution was to, you know, in parentheses, work on music and Logic. Not that I'm opposed to working on podcasts and Logic, but definitely work on music. And it's still in my mind a lot that I want to build that up. So I try to do it as much as I can. Some days I get a real time into actually work on like producing a little bit of something or get, you know, a musical idea started or down or mess around with tones. There's, you know, there's always something to do. Mm-hmm. And sometimes for me, just because there's only so much time in a day, the choice is between doing that or like learning a tune or practicing flat picking or whatever. So, sometimes it's a binary choice between logic and the other thing. Mm-hmm. And in the back of my mind, I know, okay, I've committed to this. So I'm always trying to find a chance to do it and not putting any like real bigger expectations besides just opening the application on it has helped, because I know once I've opened it up, I'm good. I've achieved mm-hmm. my resolution, and anything after that is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have to remind myself when I'm like working on a musical idea or trying to improve some kind of skill while I've got Logic open, not to belabor it in the moment too much, because the daily reps are the thing that's going to lead to improvement.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. How are your resolutions going?
Pretty good. One thing I wanted to do was get rid of a bunch of older music books that I'm not using, so yeah. that they could find a good home instead of just sitting on my shelf. And I have found new homes for a dozen of my music books, and I've still got a stack of them, and I'm going to maybe keep trying to find new homes for those. So that was part of my resolution.
Can you send me what you haven't sent, a list of what you haven't sent out yet?
Yeah, sure. Glad to.
I wonder if I might be able to claim any of them.
Oh, sure. I would love that. Yeah, that would be great. I will send you a list. I heard this interview with Emma Stone, the actor, on Fresh Air a couple days ago. And she was talking about anxiety and how a lot of anxiety has to do with stuff in the past and stuff in the future, you know, worried about what's going to happen or kind of replaying what did happen. And like the main job to try to work through that is to stay present. So I'm trying to stay present with, okay, this is the music I am working on, and not beat myself up about stuff I didn't work on or should be working on. So the stuff that I'm trying to get present with is just two books. And
that's,
I feel
right,
like
the
there's,
Bach and the Jimmy, right?
Right. There's a Jimmy Weibel book called Classical yeah. Country. And then Bach is these solo pieces that these pieces that J.S. Bach wrote for solo violin called the Partitas and Sonatas. It's really beautiful music. Like if I spend an hour practicing Bach, it's really satisfying, even though it's nowhere near being able to perform any of this stuff on stage or in a studio. You know, it's not like that, but it's just very satisfying music to play.
I agree with you. It's such meat and potatoes, muscle, connective tissue, bones kind of music. I learned an entire lute suite over the course of maybe like a year and a half, probably starting about 5 years ago. And I've since forgotten pretty much all of it, but I still play the prelude as a warm up. And sometimes if I'm feeling like my technique needs a little brush up, I'll nail down a specific section and work on, you know, building up the tempo or trying to separate the dynamics of the voices or something like that. You know, but I do it on a steel string guitar with pick and fingers, which is totally not the quote unquote right way.
Yeah, but like when that music was written, the steel string guitar didn't even exist, you know, but it's the, it.
Yeah. It's the instrument that I'm comfortable with and that I've sort of built up some stuff on. So it, like if I were, like I've studied a little bit of classical guitar in my life, but if I were going to really commit to that, it would be a completely different thing. And like you, I'm not out here trying to make a Bach record. I just want to play it because it's just pure music and it feels really good to play when you got it really going.
Right, right.
Actually, I'm kind of curious what you think about this because I sort of have two opposing thoughts on this when it comes to warming up. Do you play stuff that's really easy? And I'm asking, you know, personally for you or just what you tell your students, when we're talking about warming up, physically, do you go for stuff that feels really easy because you're just sitting down to play and the blood is not flowing yet? And or do you go for something that's going to really push you, get you right to your limits right out of the gate so that anything less than that is going to feel easy?
Right. It's like those hot ones, you know, spicy sauce on chicken wings. Challenges. You know, I don't have one thing that I do all the time. I can think of a few days in the last couple of weeks where I had maybe only 30 minutes that I was really going to get to sit and practice because I had other stuff to do during the day. And if I open up Jimmy Weibel and play that music for 30 minutes, it's more the latter. It's like what you're like, that stuff pushes me to my limits technically and reading wise. So it's a lot of like brain power focus and awkward hand stuff, some stretchy stuff, some twisty counterpoint stuff. So I've recently had a couple of those days where my warm up, I'm going straight for the hard stuff because in a 30-minute practice, probably what I should do is still warm up for 5 minutes and then get into that. But I don't always do that. I get myopic and I'm just, I got to get to this. And I do it. I don't know that that's the best thing, but I don't think it's any harm. What I really try to avoid on the guitar is to just go through the motions and be on kind of an autopilot. I really want to be intentional all the time. And so sometimes I will warm up with something that is technically easy or conceptually easy, but still not something I've played a million times. Yesterday, for example, I was like, okay, let's take C major 7. That's a chord. I know all of the inversions of that all over the place. And so in order to keep it fresh, I was like, okay, well, this is a chord with 4 notes in it. What are all the possible 3-note groups of the 4? So what are the 3-note ways I could suggest C major 7? And okay, there's 4 of them. And then of each of those 4 3-note clusters, there's 6 possible arrangements, you know, as a stack or as a melody. So you get to these 24 3-note ideas that express a 4-note thing. And I just worked through those all over the fretboard with a drum loop playing so that I had a sense of rhythm. And none of that was hard. I wasn't stretching my fingers into awkward shapes, but I did have to find a lot of these things because I'm not, they're not in my muscle memory. So I like those kind of things as a warm up because it gets the blood flowing. I'm not overstretching or doing something that could hurt my hands, but I'm also not just like
playing something you've played a million times before.
that should be okay, because like if you do calisthenics, say, in the morning, there's no reason to be, you know, overthinking your crunches or your leg lifts or whatever. But you do want to be present. And so I find that if I give myself just a slight different take on something, even if it's something familiar, then it helps me stay present and not just do the thing. You know what I mean?
Totally. On the first episode of these, I mentioned that I've been working on my sight reading by way of reading a few pages out of this Beethoven string quartet book every morning. And that's generally been the first thing I do when I sit down to play. And that thing that you described, it does exactly that for me. Often it's not a physical technical challenge. It's something very legible and possible, but it's you know, I'm seeing it and hearing it as it's coming out in the moment, and I'm focused on sound and volume and touch. So it's good. I'm moving along.
I mean, I guess that's the one thing about, you know, this big library of guitar books that I'm trying to get rid of. It's like, I could keep them around just as material to read and not look at it as, you know, oh, here's all the stuff I should be working on. But just like, oh yeah, if I feel like spending some time just reading, it's nice to have like a reading library rather than having to poke around on the internet to try to find, you know, PDFs of stuff to read, and then I'm staring at a screen or whatever. So,
yeah, but, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with doing something radical to orient your mindset in the way you want it to be. One last thing kind of off of that thought, when you were saying in your own practice, it's very easy to get myopic and the shoulds or wishing you were doing it this way, but you're just doing it this way because this is what you can manage for today. I think it's important for anybody listening to this to know that just because you write a guitar book doesn't mean you're consistent about following everything that you said everybody should do in the guitar book that you wrote. And that all that stuff in there is, at least speaking for myself, it is a reminder of, you know, what we want our priorities to be for ourselves too. Oftentimes we're doing the same things we tell our students not to do because we're human.
Totally.
You know, yeah. And to have some compassion for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely, you know, no shame about anything, whatever you're doing, whatever you're not doing. This is not about any kind of shame. I mean, that's one of the reasons when I started doing YouTubing and stuff, that was just like one of my mantras and remains that. Like, I am not ever going to make a YouTube video that either where I tell people you're doing it wrong or has anything about doing it wrong in the title, just as clickbait. There's plenty of that already out there in the zeitgeist. So yeah, anybody listening or anybody who's read our book should know, yeah, we're just human. We're doing our best. Show up, be present, do your best, and then do it again tomorrow. And a lifetime of that probably you'll keep getting better. And if you know that you're doing your best every day, then that's a good life. Even if you don't find the metronome getting faster or, you know, whatever, like just doing the work is the reward, I find.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. Yeah. If you're a ambitious or goal-oriented person, that can be a hard thing to remember.
Yeah.
Should we jump into our remote contributors here?
Yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do that.
Cool. I am excited. We've got a ton of these. This is going to be a real long episode, and we already did a lot of stuff right at the top. Let me pull up. Here's Mike Adams. If you don't know Mike Adams, you should, because to know Mike Adams is to love Mike Adams.
Mm-hmm. I've put a lot of thought into the question of musical resolutions since you asked. A really interesting question that's gotten me to take a long, hard look at where I need to improve, where I'm going, all of that. And after a lot of thought, I think my greatest area of improvement for the year comes down to confidence. I can think of so many performances in the past, in the long ago, where I tried to minimize myself. You know, I take my wide shoulders and I slump them forward. I look down at my fretboard. I make no eye contact with the audience. And whether that was my idea of cool or the result of my upbringing, maybe unhealthy collaborative environments, I'm not sure. But it's clear to me that I have lacked confidence over the years. But I can also say that I've improved greatly on that over the last 5 or so years. There's an old paraphrased Kim Gordon quote that I come to by way of Jeff Tweedy that goes, "People pay to see people believe in themselves." I always think of that before I take the stage every single time because it's so true. I'm happier than ever with the way that I play now. I'm thrilled with my sound. And the last few shows that I've played with the band I'm in were incredibly affirming. The band is so supportive. We're playing our asses off. We know the songs inside and out. And all of that means that I don't have to worry anymore about my parts or how the performance goes. I have confidence in my friends, and they have confidence in me, and that means everything and lets me concentrate on being in the moment and having a lot of fun on stage, interacting with the crowd. These are all things that are really important to a performance. And sure, the context of the music you're playing, you know, is part of that as well. But in this band, I want to be big. I want to be larger than life. And I can't do that if I'm holding myself back. And what's funny about this is that if you look at who I am as a musician, it doesn't make any sense. I like very sparkly guitars. I love huge Marshall cabinets. I adore Jazzmaster played through fuzz at volume. I paint with feedback. These are not the choices of a shy man. Where am I coming from? So this year, I really want to get out of my own way, and I want to start believing in myself and my abilities, because I finally think that I'm really good. And of course, I can get better, but I just will. I naturally will, because I know where I am right now and I really like it. So confidence this year, that's where I'm going. Also, I want to learn how to finish songs, because I've got so many ideas that I think are great, but I can't finish lyrics. So yeah, I've got two. Anyway, thanks for asking me this question and forcing me to understand myself better. Hope you're well.
Oh man, that was beautiful.
Wow, Mike. Wow. Woo. I love that.
Man, what a great way to start.
That's gold. I'm gonna listen to that again when we're done here. I want to go back. I bet that's a thing that a lot of people have to reconcile, their like Superman side and their Clark Kent side. Mike, thank you. That's really beautiful.
Yeah.
Who's next?
Creston Lee.
Yeah, I asked Creston because mostly we've been talking to players, and I thought it would be fun to hear from a maker. Creston, if people don't know, is a great builder of guitars, electric guitars. I discovered him in the pages of Fretboard Journal a few years ago, and got to meet him in person at the Fretboard Summit last year in Chicago. And he just has such a beautiful energy.
Here he is.
Hi, Adam. Hi, Ethan. This is Creston Lee calling from Burlington, Vermont. As 2024 gets started, I am trying to listen to more music while I work. That may seem like the most simple, silly thing, but you know, I spend all day wearing hearing protection, working by myself, and that hearing protection is connected by Bluetooth to the phone in my pocket. And I've certainly gotten in the habit over the years of listening to podcasts such as this one and audiobooks and that sort of thing. But I'm finding that since, after all, love for music is what got me into this work to begin with, that it's sort of a profound change to you know, rediscover records that I love and discover new records, or to listen to every record made by a certain artist from the dawn of time until today. It's a nice way to be reminded while working that whatever guitar I may be touching at that moment isn't just, you know, a task at hand or sort of a fetish object, but it's a tool or device for making music. So it's kind of a thrill to listen to some sort of nice guitar music while working on a guitar. So that may sound like the most minimal of all non-revolutionary changes, but I'm finding in my life it really is changing how my day feels, and hopefully is having a nice effect on the instruments I'm making. Happy New Year to both of you, if it's not too late to say such a thing in late January. I hope to see you around. Bye.
I've never built a guitar, but I'm trying to visualize just the experiential difference, you know, sanding down a neck and hearing music, you know, versus somebody talking and imagining, oh yeah, like, yeah, I can totally see how it, listening to music while you build a guitar could be like a really exciting and invigorating experience.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes me think about, you know, next time I sit down to record something, thinking a little more about, you know, what, where, it, like what somebody might be, you know, how people may listen to music, you know, not striving for some like recording ideal, but striving for something that could really be of use and or joy to the end user.
What's somebody going to be doing while they listen to this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah, Creston, that's really inspiring. Thank you. All right. Well, who's next, Ethan?
How about my buddy Ben Garnett? Do you know Ben?
I don't.
He's great. He is based in Nashville. He plays guitar for Missy Raines, the great bluegrass bass player and singer-songwriter. And he's a really brilliant composer himself. Got an awesome record out. We made a little EP of duo tunes maybe like 5 or 6 years ago. And he's a real thoughtful guy. So I'll put this on here.
Hi, Ethan and Adam. Ben Garnett here. What a wonderful idea to have this New Year's guitar resolutions. Yeah, I've been thinking about it. And I think next year I really want to take seriously this idea of having my subconscious mind almost fully saturate and inform all aspects of my guitar playing. And I don't mean this really in a drug-induced or psychedelic way, although no judgment to those who do that, but more in a pretty deliberate performance psychology kind of way. There's a really great book called The Inner Game of Tennis that talks about having two selves. One is the conscious mind, the mind that can analyze and break things down and make judgments, and the other is the unconscious. And that's the mind that, in many ways, you know, is the only mind that can do things at the highest level, because it is very specifically unburdened by all the things that the conscious mind has. I feel like for most of my young adult life, I've approached playing music from a pretty analytic perspective, very saturated by the conscious mind. And I'm just kind of ready to let go of that and really, you know, deeply trust all these things that I've learned and instilled. And I suppose really more than anything, just try to get out of my own way.
Yeah, Ben, I relate so heavily to that. I was playing a gig last night and found myself, you know, 90 something percent of the time able to be in that space. And then once in a while, I'd start thinking. And then my fingers would be like, whoa, what, wait, what? And I wouldn't stick the landing because I started thinking. And instead of just trusting my subconscious mind to finish its own thoughts and go where it needs to go. And so, yeah, totally relate to that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I definitely relate to what Ben says about spending a lot of time being analytical about stuff and just wanting to be like, all right, I've done that work. I think anybody who's gone through formal music education and felt burnt out by it in any way can probably relate to that.
Yeah. 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 Trust that you've done. I mean, in a way it relates to a little bit to Mike's thing about confidence. It's not confidence necessarily, but it's about trust. Like trust that when you're on stage or in the studio or wherever, like in a real music situation, trust that you've done the work. And now is not the time to cram or, you know, start doing homework again.
Or question yourself.
Right. Now is the time to believe in yourself and then just see what happens.
If you're unprepared. Even if, oh man, like I so often overprepare for gigs. Like this gig I was talking about that I did earlier this week, I made my own charts and I like didn't really know all the songs as well as I would maybe want to if I were to be, you know, doing a tour with this artist. But I said to myself the day of the gig, we had 3 rehearsals, I said, I don't want any charts on stage for myself. I don't want to look at a single chart. And I didn't know if I was going to pull it off or if I was going to fall completely flat on my face. And I wanted to see what would happen if I just trusted the work that I did do instead of thinking about all the work that I didn't do. And I made it through the gig. I didn't forget any songs. You know, maybe like 5 to 10% of some small details didn't quite come off the way I had hoped. But if I had had the charts in front of me, I wouldn't have gotten to trust my subconscious. So
yep.
That's a big long roundabout way of connecting to what Ben was talking about.
Who's next?
Lainey Stern is up next. This is a really great one.
My name is Lainey Stern, and my New Year's resolution is to to practice some of those fancy permutations my friends are playing on the guitar. Permutation means you like mess up the order of any group of notes you play. You just like put them into a mixer and shake them up good, and whatever comes out, you connect to the next one. And some of it was inspired that I play in Mike Stern's band. And some of the tempos are really, really fast. And it's nice. It's fun to hit up against the time. And you need to practice like small groups of notes, in my opinion, to do that nicely, like saxophone players do that. So I stole it from the saxophone players. I steal a lot of things from saxophone players because my piano player, Leo Genovese, plays with a great saxophone player and he steals everything from him. So I steal it from my piano player who steals it from the saxophone player. Thievery all around. So that's my New Year's resolution. And also, the other thing is all the songs that I play, I try to play them by myself with the guitar. Melody, chords, everything. Yeah. That'll keep me busy for the year.
Oh, man. That was great. It connected for me back to what Grant Gordy said last week about learning tunes. And we got on that whole riff of what does it mean to know a tune, etc. Her idea of like, okay, if I can play all the elements on the guitar, you know, get through it, play a really communicable version of it just myself. I think that's a really wonderful barometer of knowing a tune.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. To be, yeah. Because like there's this idea of solo guitar being some particular thing where, you know, you sound, I don't even want to mention any names, but of course there are great solo guitar players in a bunch of genres that we all know and love. But this is different from that. It's not like, oh yeah, I'm going to show up and do a solo concert of all of the songs I know. It's just the idea that on the guitar, you could play all of the elements by yourself. And that's really what knowing a tune is. You know the melody, you know the harmony, you know the rhythm, and in some way you can express that on the guitar. You know, that, yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the idea of scrambling the elements is similar to what I was talking about that I was working on yesterday. So I guess it's maybe that was stuck in my subconscious from when I got together with Leni and recorded that. Yeah, just taking something you know and rearranging it. That's beautiful.
It's all connected.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we played Adam Miller yet.
I can't remember. Let's listen to it, and maybe it'll ring a bell. I'm not sure if we did or if we didn't.
Okay. Australia's finest.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, this is Adam Miller, and I'm currently at home in Newcastle, Australia. My New Year's guitar resolution would probably be to pursue less perfection. I think, especially in regards to recording, probably writing, and definitely with recording videos for things. I know especially when I'm recording, I tend to, and even writing, think about who's going to be listening to this down the track, maybe who's going to be reviewing it, who's going to be talking about it on the internet, and all those things come into play while I'm sitting in front of the microphones and tend to make me overthink everything and either play music that's a little bit too safe, or actually what's been happening is I just never finish it because I get so in my head about it that I can't come to release it. I've been listening to a lot of live recordings that I've done recently, and they have all this spontaneity and fun that I don't seem to capture when I record. So I'm really excited to commit to things quicker and not get in my head as much with my playing.
Yeah. I have known Adam Miller a long time and we've hung out and played a good amount. But I don't think I'd actually seen him do like a full set of his own music until last summer at the Fretboard Summit. And I was so struck by how captivating of a live performer he is. He's really a treat to watch and listen do his thing. And he really, you know, brings the audience in and connects with them. And I think any live recordings he's going to put out are surely going to capture that ability to connect that he has. And I'm excited for that for him and for us as listeners.
Oh yeah. That's cool to hear him say that he wants to be loose. And I know he did share recently an album. You can hear it on, I think it's on the streaming services and on a bank. It was a live set that he recorded with a looper and it's beautiful. And maybe going back and listening to that was part of the discovery process for him of like, oh yeah, when I don't overthink stuff, then this is something that can happen. And it's a beautiful record. It's loose and free. And yeah.
That connects to all the stuff we were talking about earlier with recording. It's so easy when you're recording yourself and engineering yourself and playing and setting up the mic and all that to really chase your tail in pursuit of some impossible level of perfection. Remember Nathaniel Murphy was talking about that thing in his resolution last week of being, you know, becoming accepting and appreciative of those little imperfections. When you're recording in a studio and there's an engineer and you're in the booth and there's time on the clock, you kind of have to just let the chips fall where they may and do your best of course. But, you know, you're not necessarily always going to leave totally satisfied. And so when you have the freedom of you're not paying for a studio, there's not an engineer here, you know, looking at his watch because we got to get to the next overdub. It can be very easy to just go around in circles and really get detail oriented to an extreme. So the challenge is to finish something or keep building on it and really trust this kind of first thought, best thought. And like, if not to say that, like, if you think something sucks, you know, leave it. But like, if something feels like it sucks because you've been sitting there for an hour trying to get it, if you come back the next day, it might not be as bad as you think.
Right.
I'm just giving myself advice that I need to hear.
Right.
Reuben Cox is up next. Reuben is the proprietor of Old Style Guitar Shop in beautiful Silver Lake, Los Angeles, California.
Yeah, and his guitars are everywhere. You know, if you've been paying attention to guitar in the last, you know, 5 years, 10 years, then yeah, you know, Blake Mills plays Reuben guitars, Maddie Cunningham plays Reuben's guitars. He really started the rubber bridge revolution. There it is. Yep. So Ruben is maybe, I don't know, a name that everybody knows, but he's really the epicenter of Los Angeles guitar culture. And interestingly, you know, didn't train to be a luthier. Like, he went to art college. He studied photography at Cooper Union. And he's really coming at everything, I think, from a real artist perspective. Anyway, just some context if people don't know who Ruben is.
Well, are you like a habit person, like same thing every day for breakfast, like wake up around the same time, or you wing it?
I mean, maybe a bit of both. You know, I think just I'm trying to get out of habits. Just the being this small business owner, shopkeeper, or whatever. It's like you know, you're the boss, you can stop anytime, but you never do, you know? So you can just get caught up in work and have the good fortune that the shop is doing well. So there's this endless stream of repairs and like you can just keep working forever. So, you know, just try to, you know, if there are any New Year's resolutions there, it's maybe like, you know, work hard, but also take some time out here and there to, you know, go. We went and saw the William Blake show at the Getty on Tuesday, and that chewed up the whole day, you know, but it was great. It's like time spent with a loved one and got to see some great art. I'm a huge fan of William Blake. And that was great. And I'm still vaguely caught up with repairs. So it's all good in the end, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to carve out a day, or I find it is anyway, to do something that feels like such an indulgence, you know?
Yeah. And it's, and all that stuff like filters into your life. And it's, you know, if you have to view it as not as an indulgence, like there's a lot of, you know, people who come through the shop, you know, I won't name any names. I don't know, USC undergrads or whatever, come in and like shredding scales or something like that, which is great. It's good to have like technical mastery, but like, you know, you need to supplement. We all do. I'm talking to myself as I say this, because I'm like, whatever, my like overuse of shredding scales is just working all the time, when you need to be like, you know, coming up with something interesting to cook that you haven't cooked in a while, or go see an art show, or, you know, read a book, look at some plants, garden, or something like that. Make you a more interesting person, possibly a better musician.
You know, as someone who was a USC undergrad, watch it, Ruben. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, he's totally right. Being well-rounded helps our craft.
For sure, yeah. To go out, go stop and smell the roses, or go to a museum, or read a book, or see a movie. Like, it all feeds the flame.
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily have to be conscious either. It doesn't have to be verbalized. Okay, I'm relating this thing I did back to my music, and da, da, da. It can just like enjoy your life, man.
Yeah.
Here's Stash Wysach, one of my all-time favorite people.
Hey, Ethan. Thanks for asking me to do this. Here's a few thoughts of things I want to be pursuing in the new year. I want to deepen my understanding of the ideal function of music in myself, its actual relationship to what it means to be human and why it exists. I want to sing more solos before I actually learn them on the guitar. I want to improvise more and think less, embrace the unknown. On a technical level, I want to work out how to approach symmetrical scales like half whole and whole half diminished and augmented scales and things like that in a musical way without being overly intellectual. They're kind of between a chromatic and tonal zone. So I haven't really figured out how to get into them. I also want to get more rooted in fiddle tunes and more free in them also as a vehicle, ideally, to explore everything I just talked about. And on a practical level, I really want to record a solo guitar album. Yeah, that'll probably be my New Year's resolutions for the next 50 years, too, if I live that long.
Yeah, that sounds ambitious, right?
Like beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's a lifetime in there. I thought that was a really beautiful combination of the philosophical and the practical.
Mm-hmm.
And I will be first in line to get that solo guitar album.
I want to hear that solo record. I want to... man, I wish I was his roommate for some chunk of this year. I think it'd be really inspiring to just be like around all of that focus and curiosity and wow, cool. Thank you for introducing me to Stash. I didn't know about him before you showed me what he was up to. So thanks, Ethan.
He's so great. He was living in LA for a short time during the pandemic. He's based in the Boston area, and we would get together in a park near where we lived with our masks on and play acoustic guitar duo, jazz standards and fiddle tunes basically. And it was some of the most incredible playing experiences I've ever had getting to do that with him. And again, you know, some of the things he was saying about being rooted and free in fiddle tunes, I was like, you are the king of being both rooted and free in fiddle tunes. You're already doing it. Just keep doing it. We got two more short ones. Drew Taubenfeld. If people don't know Drew, he is based here in LA. Brilliant multi-instrumentalist, not just guitar. And composer. He has a great group called DTIG with a cellist named Isaiah Gage. They play beautiful instrumental music, kind of classical and kind of folk music influenced equally. And he's also the music director for Casey Musgraves.
Go for Drew.
Go for Drew.
In 2024, I really want to pay attention to the internal monologue that's running in the background when I'm playing. I notice that there's just a lot of self-doubt, a lot of mean things said, a lot of critical thoughts that are just kind of weighing down my experience as I play. And I just think that would be really nice to excavate a little bit and create more joy for myself, create more experience in the moment of enjoying my friend's company while playing music and creating patience. I feel like a lot of times I'm filling the anxiety with notes. And if I can calm that voice down, I could be a more patient musician and just play the notes that matter. That's what I hope to do.
All the things he said about joy and patience. I mean, I know I sound like a broken record here, but Drew is one of the most joyful musicians I know.
Yep.
I hope he doesn't feel like he's lacking that in any way, because I certainly don't experience him to be when we play together.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw him play in New York a few months ago when he came through with his group with cello and trumpet. And lots of joy, lots of patience, really good vibes.
Yeah. But I totally get the internal chatter thing, you know, we all go through that.
Yeah.
Last but not least, Chris Eldridge. I'm sure anybody listening to this podcast knows who Chris Eldridge is.
I was just going to say, if somebody reads Fretboard Journal and listens to this podcast and doesn't know who Critter Eldridge is, I would be flabbergasted.
Stranger things have happened. Go for Critter.
Hey, Ethan and Adam. My New Year's resolutions, I kind of have two, and they're sort of in opposition to each other. But I shouldn't say opposition, because everything helps. They're just they're coming from different angles. Anyway, one is to work on my sight reading, which is pretty abysmal. But I find that, especially in stuff with Punch Brothers these days, what we're doing this year, we've got this new kind of podcast thing called the Energy Curfew Music Hour that we're working on. Anyway, there's a lot of written music. We play Bach most weeks. There's just a lot of written music, and I can hardly read, and I want to get better at that. One, to just lower the amount of stress when I make that show, but two, because I really think that if you can read, I feel like the musicians I know who can read really well have a good view of music that's not totally experiential. It's not totally in the moment. You know, you can look at a piece of music and see what the rhythms are and kind of actually understand what the rhythms are without having to actually feel those rhythms in real time. You can see the pitches. And I just think there's value in having that kind of abstract relationship with music, because then you can manipulate those things and you can see patterns. And I'm very much, you know, not that kind of musician. I'm very instinctive, instinctual. So anyway, that's one side. And then the other side of it is to really lean in harder than ever into that instinctive thing. I've been watching some of those Tom Bukovac videos on YouTube lately. And Brian Sutton's always told me how great Tom Bukovac is. And I never really heard him. I just, until recently, but man, what a beautiful guitar player that guy is. And for all I know, he knows like everything and is the world's greatest sight reader, but he doesn't really strike me as being that kind of musician. He strikes me as just being somebody who's so in tune with being just so fully present in the moment and having such a finely tuned sense of beauty and individuality and all of that. So I kind of want to work on that, channel my inner Tom Bukovac. That's what I want to work on in 2024. Much love, everybody. Bye.
Beautiful. Thank you, Critter.
Wow. Wow, man. Oh, that's great.
That was juicy.
Super juicy. Yeah. Channel your inner Tom Bukovac. That's a, I want to write that down and tape it to my, my desk or someplace where I'm going to see it every day. Yeah. Tom is just such a natural.
He's amazing. I've been really digging into the new Sarah Jarosz record a lot, and that's got a lot. I think at least half of it, if not more, is Tom Bukovac playing the electric guitar so beautifully.
Yeah.
I've known that about Critter for a while, that he doesn't consider himself much of a reader. And I remember the first time he told me that, I was like totally flabbergasted, because if you know anything about the Punch Brothers, a lot of that music is quite heavily composed. I'm thinking especially of that first Punch record, The Blind Leaving the Blind, that 40-minute suite. Chris Thiele wrote all of that out, and those guys all learned how to play it. And Critter said to me that he learned it all pretty much by ear. And I was just like, oh my God, the commitment.
Yeah. There's a neat thing that he was talking about in the reading part up front that I just want to circle back to, because two of my guitar heroes have said kind of as much about, you know, reading and writing music. You know, a lot of people get stressed out about reading and they, oh, I got to learn to read and it's important and all. When in real life, as a working guitar player, you may not be asked to read much at all. So it's not the big important thing that we can sometimes make it out to be. But Joe Gore, I remember him saying that, you know, it's neat to look at music on the page and just be able to think about it and
visualize it, you know, like Critter was saying.
Yeah, the bird's eye view.
Bird's eye view. And even get into something that's not playable on the guitar, but see it and understand it.
Yeah, I think the best advice I ever got about reading was a little bit every day goes a very long way.
Yeah.
Well, we have come to the end of our takeover for the Fretboard Journal podcast. This has been so, so fun and inspiring and edifying and all the things to get to do this with you, Adam, and to hear from all these wonderful guitar players it's just been so great. And it's really just totally broken my brain open and has been so great to do. And has left me so motivated and excited for the year, for me and for you and for everybody. I think 2024 totally is going to be a good one.
It's going to be amazing. So thank you to everybody who contributed. It's like we had this, you know, little coffee hang where we got to invite, you know, James Valentine and Mary Halverson and Critter. And it's this like amazing cohort of players that someday I hope we actually can have just a massive coffee hang and be together. But in the meantime, this getting to hear what was going on for people at the top of this year. Yeah, this will fuel me. And I hope you listening for a good long time, because it's just so much juice, so much juice.
So much. Maybe one final plug just for our book. If you haven't got it yet, you can get it on Amazon. You can get it from the Music Emporium, their online store.
It's not hard to find. Just look for the title of our book is String Theories. It's written by myself, Adam Levy, and Ethan Sherman. And you can find it wherever you find guitar books, really.
Yeah, and if you already have it, please leave us a review on Amazon, because that helps it reach people who don't know about it. And ultimately, we would love for anybody who doesn't know about this book, but who could maybe get something out of it, to know about it.
Yes.
And I guess maybe if you have your own musical New Year's resolutions or any questions for us or comments, maybe you can email them to stringtheoriesbook@gmail.com. I don't know when or where we will address them, but it would certainly be great to hear from the folks who have been listening to this. I think that would be super cool.
Yeah. That would be super cool. It's stringtheoriesbook@gmail.com.
stringtheoriesbook@gmail.com.
Yeah, send us a note. Let us know how it hits you.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. Cool. Well, thanks for giving us the keys to the kingdom, Jason. We'll hand it back over to you for now.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm going to miss it. Yeah, we had the Fretboard Journal company car and the company credit card, and we've just been cruising. But it's time to hand it back over. Yeah, Jason, you can readjust the seats the way that you like them now and
fix the mirrors.
Okay, that was our final installment of String Theories. So much food for thought. Did you love it? Please let me know. podcast@fretboardjournal.com. Get the book, of course. It's great. I've never let anyone take over the podcast for 4 episodes. I'm only doing it because I love the book and I love these guys and I want them to succeed. And now, as promised, we've heard a whole bunch of great New Year's resolutions from a whole bunch of great artists. Now you get to hear a couple from me. This is a safe space, right? I can be vulnerable. I can be honest. I'm going to start off with a general one. I know I am not the only small business owner out there who tunes into this podcast. If you are out there in the trenches trying to make a go out of art or something unique, whether or not you have employees, I feel for you. I am right there with you. I know it's hard. I think I heard Tim Ferriss once state that when he's overwhelmed or trying to navigate a really tough project, he asks himself the question, what would this look like if it were easy? I am no one to doubt what Tim Ferriss says works. He is the master of productivity and human development, but for whatever reason, that phrase didn't totally speak to me, so I tweaked it a bit. When I am feeling overwhelmed by a crappy day or trying to navigate a really tough task, when I'm feeling like I'm not being true to myself or I'm getting distracted with whatever I'm working on or focusing on, work-wise, music-wise, you name it, I've started asking myself, what would this look like if it were fun? Which basically is me asking myself, what do you really want to be doing? And what would it look like if you were on cloud nine and firing on all cylinders, not a care in the world? This isn't magic. This isn't some Serenity Now thing. Things still suck, even after you say that phrase to yourself. But it's easy for me to remember it. And I ask myself that all the time. I have instant recall for that phrase. I should have it tattooed on my arm. I thought about it when I was at NAMM and feeling like a fish out of water. I think about it when I'm staring at a computer screen and feeling like I have writer's block, or when I'm playing guitar. And more often than not, it helps me pause and reorient myself and think about what I have going for me and what I'm grateful for and what I'm good at and what I should be working on. What would this look like if it were fun? That's it. That is, I guess, a New Year's resolution or maybe a mantra. I don't know. Second, and this is more personal, you can tune out if you don't want to hear this. I've got a big birthday coming up in like 6 weeks, and I am not buying a convertible. I'm not leaving my family, but I'm trying really hard to get myself in shape this year. And the thing that I've turned to is running, trail running, running through the woods. I love hiking. This is faster than hiking. More goes on. You can cover more ground. I like running, but I don't like running on the sidewalk or the roads. I get really bored. So I've enjoyed this trail running thing, and I've signed up for a couple of races that I truly have no business being in. And that little act of signing up for something, even if it's a relatively small amount of money, like $60, and the thing is 6 months away, somehow makes it legit and somehow makes me think that now all of a sudden I'm a runner. So wish me luck. Maybe some of you run too. Let me know if you do or not. I found joy doing it. I like being outside in the trees. I enjoy biking too, but I'm always worried I'm going to break something by going too fast. So running seems to be where I'm at right now in my life. And signing up for something, even if it's some open mic sign up sheet or something, it makes a world of difference. Sometimes we just got to sign up for stuff. And so sign up for whatever you want to sign up for. I'm going to be doing some long ass trail runs in 2024, I hope. And wish me luck. And with those two resolutions, we will sign off on the String Theories takeover of the Fretboard Journal podcast. If you've enjoyed this, I should also add, Ethan is threatening to come back. He's got a new record coming out in just a little while, like a month or two. So we probably are going to have him back on this podcast. So stay tuned. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for making it this far. And as always, thanks for being a part of the Fretboard Journal community. I love that everybody out there is so open-minded and tunes into these shows and shares them. It means the world to me.